Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strausser, Principal and CEO at BrightPath.
This is Bray Wheeler, Consultant at BrightPath.
And you know, like every episode we do, we're almost always talking about how we can protect companies, how you can make your organization more resilient, how can you deal with disruptions, how can you deal with, detect and deal with threats that are coming at you. This episode, we're going to do something a little different, and we're going to talk about the other end of the equation, and that is if Bray and I took all of our experience in dealing with the things we just talked about, and we flipped it around and decided to come after your company, what does that offensive reputation management campaign start to look like? What if we decided that we were going to come after you as activists? What would we do?
I think it's important to preface too, as you said, offensive reputational campaigns, not necessarily a violent attack.
We'll talk about bombing your facility another day.
It's a different podcast.
Just kidding. That's not really the business we're in.
No.
But, you know, and I'll just start with something simple because I've been thinking about this particular one for, I feel like, decades. And that is, you know, we've talked before in a couple episodes about managing protests and how do you deal with people who want to protest at your location or get into your building and do some things. And I remember almost every protest I ever dealt with, we knew was coming because we had a good radar screen that showed us that this was going to happen. And 20 minutes before you were supposed to be there, we just locked the doors. Mm-hmm. And we routed employees to a secured entrance. And you could come protest and stand outside and press your face up into the glass all that you want, but you weren't going to get in and disrupt the business. It's not hard to make sure that doesn't happen. No. Simply by having some operational security, getting your group of protesters together clandestinely, realizing you don't need 200-300 people to make your point, and get people into the lobby of a company's headquarters and then do your thing. Make your protest. Do your sign holding or waving or screaming or whatever you're going to do.
Bullhorns and cowbells.
Cowbells are great. They're annoying.
Yep.
But it's not that hard to do that as opposed to announce the thing, post it in social media, and show up and find the doors locked. Am I wrong?
No, that's always what surprised me in our previous corporate lives, you know, the amount of forewarning. And even if it was something that wasn't popping up in social media or, you know, advanced contact of or something like that, when you're marching in mass through a city, particularly downtown Minneapolis, that had, you know, a system, you know, where different businesses could talk to each other via a radio frequency for different things, whether it's weather or city maintenance disruptions or something like that, you would know groups of people are now marching around downtown. Well, who are they interested in? And it was pretty easy to figure out who they were interested in, whether or not they had some kind of vested interest in you. And it always surprised me that it wasn't, they went so far as to take advantage of not announcing themselves, but then would show up and start marching around. Now, certainly disrupting, you know, skyways in Minneapolis, pretty effective to get a message out. But if your intent is really to cause a disruption at a location, it's surprising how nobody would take advantage of a quieter entrance.
Or like I would
flash mob.
Totally agree. A flash mob like situation. I think there's also that, you know, there's the protest. You can target a protest or another type of disruption at a softer target than the company's main headquarters. I mean, mm-hmm. Go to a branch, go to a store, go to a distribution center.
An event.
Go to an event.
A participant in or hosting or.
Yeah, and not like a shareholders meeting event, but I'm talking about an event. You know, it's to me, the most effective disruption is one that the person or organization you're trying to disrupt just doesn't see coming. Mm-hmm. So, like, find out a conference where one of the senior leaders is presenting. Go to the conference and disrupt their keynote. Mm-hmm. It won't take more than a couple of people yelling or holding up a banner or chanting or whatever to disrupt that in a way that registers the message. I mean, look at the first round of Democratic debates for Democratic presidential candidates. Bill de Blasio was challenged just a few weeks ago by protesters. They actually started talking when Cory Booker was on stage, and I think that would confuse some people. But their target was the mayor of New York. They went all the way to this debate to yell at the mayor of New York about the death of Eric Garner and why the police officer who was involved in his death had not been fired. And that got all kinds of attention.
Yep.
Because it was simply not expected.
Not expected. I mean, some of these events, particularly, you know, if you're talking a marketing event or, you know, you're even talking a speech or, you know, a presentation of some kind, oftentimes there's media right there. And the thing that the people are talking about or the event that, you know, is going on isn't super interesting. It's news. They're going to cover it. But if you're able to insert yourself from a controversy standpoint, from a different message to take issue with something that even is unrelated, that's far more interesting to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And the attention becomes that much more for you mm-hmm. in a way that is highly, you know, much more expected or unexpected.
Executive homes are another one to consider. Yep. You know, I think a lot of focus is put on the homes of CEOs.
Yep.
They do tend to be, I think, better secured than others. I would look at the other executives and how can I use their probable lack of security in order to effectively protest that or something that they're at or doing.
Yeah. I mean, certainly executives are a good target. I mean, even as you start to get down the line, you know, if you're targeting the head of security or the head of cybersecurity or an HR person or a marketing person that's typically out front, if you're highlighting a key or kind of visible person within the organization, it's going to get some attention. Now, certainly the executives draw the most, but if you have a highly visible individual within your company that's not, you know, one of those kind of in the C-suite, they're far probably easier to kind of disrupt, target, because they're less secure. They just don't have that assumed level of visibility that would require that that type of security.
Another area to look at is social media. There's a whole number of social media things that we're going to talk about. One that I think is particularly effective is to find the personal social media account of the CEO, of another executive, of a key leader, and start messaging them directly as opposed to going through corporate channels to get to them. Same thing on, you use on Facebook in terms of messaging, using Facebook Messenger. You do Instagram private messages. You can do Twitter direct messages, but that's much more difficult to get away from than like your corporate email box where their assistant or whatever can filter you out. Now I'm applying pressure and they're getting hundreds or thousands of messages from myself and my other activists about whatever our cause is.
And if they're not, typically execs aren't super savvy at responding to those, knowing how to kind of close up a social media account or kind of block it off, that, you know, that those are probably a rare breed and probably won't be in the future here. But right now, demographically speaking, making some assumptions around, they're not going to know how to handle that. They're going to freeze up. They may say something unintentional. They may respond back. They may just let it go on, not knowing how to kind of freeze up that account or deactivate it or whatever the case is to make it stop.
Make it stop.
I think another kind of offshoot to that certainly is their family. Family is highly visible in many cases for some of these execs. Some have partners who are highly visible in other jobs that you're able to kind of work your way to that point. Children, grandchildren, brothers, sisters, moms, dads, certainly in the social media sphere. It also happens in the physical environment too, that families are an easy source of information to know where they are, to apply pressure, even if you want to kind of slightly intend some different kind of nefarious, you know, pressure there. That's an avenue to get some attention, but, you know, even just to show up and disrupt or to use that as part of the messaging is super easy. And we see that all the time.
And one thing that we've talked about previously is that it's often maybe more difficult to find someone's residence to learn some information about them or to get access to their photos on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. But it's usually not that hard to get to their families.
Correct.
Information. Certainly, I can think of a situation locally here where we were attempting to determine the home of a CEO for assessment purposes. And rather than, we weren't able to get access to see their Instagram account because they'd locked it down, but we were able to go through their daughter, find her Instagram account, find out that she's had geolocation turned on. And now not only do we know where they lived, but we know the vehicle that they drove because there was a picture and the license plate. We know the school that she went to and at least three or four of her friends as a part of that, because nobody ever thought, hey, they should lock down their accounts across the whole family.
Sometimes they don't want to. Sometimes it becomes a, hey, that's a personal boundary I don't want to cross. You know, my family is entitled not to have, or they should be allowed to have that freedom and that perceived anonymity online to be able to do what they want. They have nothing to do with my role as CEO of company. It's not true.
Yeah, I may think that, and they may think that, and you may think that. But the activist who only cares about, pick the issue, they don't care about any of that.
Nope.
They care about their issue.
And how the quickest route to get that message across.
Right.
With the most visibility.
Hey, their 16-year-old might be opposed to palm oil, for example.
Yep. It's pretty, and it is a pretty easy thing to apply pressure to kids of some of these families and to just pepper with questions and controversy and throwing things in front of them that says, hey, your mom or dad is an awful human, like to get a reaction and to have them react or to trick them into saying, hey, what do you think of this? Or how do you feel? Oh yeah, palm oil is awful. Well, they're not part of the organization. They're not always coached on what to say, what to do. And now you have a golden quote.
I can just see somebody saying that telling one of my daughters that daddy's awful the same day that they've just called me the worstest daddy ever for having taken something away. It would probably work.
Yep. If you get lucky and time it right.
Yep. I heard from Jeff on Facebook today who told me that you're awful, and I agree.
Kids say the darnest things.
But yeah, social media, you know, operational security with social media is a big deal. Yep. It's a really easy way for people to gain access to information and such that they shouldn't have. But I also just think social media as a whole, we talked about like messaging to personal accounts, but even social media messaging, you know, finding the viral message, getting that message out first and targeting that at a social campaign on a broad scale against a company or a personal Twitter, Facebook account, Instagram account. I mean, if you get the right viral content, like this becomes a really big deal. There was a, you know, just great example I read last night. John Hopkins fired a professor over the weekend because back in May, when the engineering building on their campus was being occupied by a protest, and after being told not to do this, he had a malfunctioning server in the building he wanted to go fix. He showed up on his own with some friends and some bolt cutters and got into the building and then was confronted by students. And, you know, I'm not going to get into whether or not firing him and all this was right or wrong, except that I thought the students were brilliant in that they filmed this and before the night was over had their video out with their narrative of what happened. And that has been the dominant narrative of what happened. And I think that video set kind of the foundation for the story that was used in the hearings that led to this professor being fired. I'm not taking a position on what was right or wrong here, right. Just that I thought the use of the video and the video captioning to tell the story the way the students wanted the story told was brilliant.
Well, it's actually one of the notes I wrote down on my pad here was record everything. As a, you know, as a protester, I'm recording everything, because you can, without the deep fakes and things like that that we've talked on other podcasts where you're doctoring video or audio or something like that, just being able to take snippets of real content, putting a narrative to it or editing them in a certain order, or just taking a snapshot in time without the context of, you know, the preceding minute on either side, you're controlling the story. Mm-hmm. And you have video, you have pictures, you know, you have evidence to support the way that you're setting up your case. And I think that's important for companies to realize too, that you need to assume you're being filmed. You need to assume there's pictures being taken. You need to assume that everything that you're doing and everything that you're saying is being recorded in some capacity and spun against you.
I think you've even got to think as a company, you got to think about communication security, because
yep.
even emails can be forwarded
yep.
to other parties. So do you keep your communication through secure means like a voice call? But of course, your voice calls can be recorded. I mean, there's a lot of things to just kind of ponder. Like we, for example, we have clients that we only communicate electronically with. I mean, we do email, but sensitive communications happen via Signal, which is an encrypted text app, if you're not familiar with that. It's used by a lot of different people and journalists out there. But I think, you know, thinking about that level of communication security starts to become an issue when you start thinking about how that can be compromised by people who don't share your point of view inside yep. the company.
Yeah. Well, and I think just even within social media, from an activism standpoint, we are running such a group, no proactive information in terms of a campaign, a disruption, something like that would be shared until after we've started the engagement, after we've conducted the protest, after it's happening, or doing, you know, live Periscope stream of something that we're already in the middle of it. Because any advance, I mean, companies have gotten pretty savvy to, hey, we got to monitor. We typically know who some of these groups are. It's not easy to kind of pick up on some of that. And hey, we can just kind of watch them or set algorithms to kind of monitor what's going on, keywords and everything else. Protesters, you know, they're going to figure out the savvy ways of getting around that. And they're going to get smart to that. And they're going to get wise. And they're going to be, they'll be on the forefront of technology, to your point, until that gets used. Then they'll move on to something else. Or like we've talked about even at the beginning, just do it via text. Do a call. Set up in one of your group meetings saying, hey, next week we're going there and we're not talking to, here's the details. We're not talking about it in any other way, shape, or form.
Voice only.
We're showing up. You know, and I think that's that flash mob, to kind of bring it back to the physical piece, that flash mob, whether it's social or physical, it's money. It's money because for a lot of these places, there's too many people coming in and out on a daily basis for a lot of different reasons. You have public lobbies or public areas that are easy to just access and, hey, I'm just reading a book. And then all of a sudden it's boom. You have 10 people, 50 people protesting. It's not hard to make that happen.
Well, even think about, and we're back to the physical protesting thing again, but surveillance of the target mm-hmm. that you want to protest. I mean, what are their routines? When do they open the doors in the right. morning? When does the security officer patrol? What happens when visitors show up?
What happens when we did a small little protest out front 3 months ago?
When we probe?
What do they do? Oh, did they lock their doors? What do they do? Do they call in police? Do they, you know, what happens? And I think surveillance is a great component of that, to just kind of pen test a little bit, penetration
just
test.
Keep in mind, good security companies with good security practices are looking for pre-operational surveillance.
They should be.
Now, we can note that not many do.
Because especially if you have a controlled campus, or even if you have a downtown city headquarters, you typically kind of know the folks that kind of rove around your building on a regular basis and kind of what the activity looks like. And when somebody's standing out there with a camera, it's kind of out of the normal, typically.
Why are you taking pictures of our building? It's an office tower.
Who are you interviewing?
So interesting.
Right.
About it.
The architecture isn't that interesting, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of things that I think companies take for granted, that, you know, activists take for granted, that I think the message here is really creativity and imagination is golden. And assume that just because you've taken all the measures to protect the executive or the company, public-facing communication channels or spaces or things like that, there's ways around it. There's access through other tenants that are sitting in your building. There's access through your family's social media account. There's access through family weddings, events, parties, speeches, anything that's out there, you got to assume is out there. And you have to be prepared for that and take it accordingly.
Even things like your home Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a corporate executive, lock that stuff down. Because have an open Wi-Fi point and have some things in your house like Nest thermostats or cameras or a Ring doorbell or whatever, and let us find that from the street the first time we pull up. Because you will lose control of all of that, or it'll be used against you. I mean, mm-hmm. imagine if somebody, if you had a Nest or Ring doorbell and somebody got a hold of the video of that, the videos off of that, and what they could do with that information. Deliveries, guests. I mean, you can have a heyday.
Well, I think just that, and I think that's an interesting point just from the whole Internet of Things aspect. I mean, there's stoves you can turn on with Alexa now. You know, I mean, everything is becoming a part of that, that, you know, to turn on some of these things when nobody's home, to access these things while people are home, to be able to hear what's going on, to see what's going on, to see what people are utilizing, to see what's being turned on, what things are set at. Technology is great, but there's that privacy piece to it too that you have to be conscious of.
Exactly. Well, I think we've run the gamut on this one, so let's wrap mm-hmm. up the episode here. I think the most important thing for people to think about as they listen to this episode is it would be beneficial to you to take the time to think about the current state of affairs at your company, your organization, and think about how, if you were to wear the black hat, how would you attack your own organization? And even if you know the things, I mean, you have inside knowledge, even the things that you know are vulnerabilities, how would you go about attacking it? And then I would set about to close or prepare some mitigation or response tactics to those vulnerabilities. Final thoughts?
As weird as it sounds, it's a fun exercise to do.
Oh, it's a blast. It's like red teaming.
Yeah. It's not the typical, hey, I got to write a process. You'll probably get to that, but at the forefront of it, this is where you get to use your imagination. This is where you get to come up with all sorts of crazy scenarios to kind of work yourself through to say, is that crazy? Is that plausible? Could that happen?
Well, if you're a publicly traded company, for fun and games, look at your 5 named executives on the compensation table. Go pull their political donations and see if you see anything controversial there.
Mm-hmm. Or see if you can find their social media.
See if you can find their social media. Not their official company one.
Their
personal one.
And see what they're...
Don't tell me they don't have one. James Comey, as director of FBI, had a clandestine Twitter account that came out mm-hmm. after he left.
They're out there. And I think that's a good way to kind of explore it too, is just to do some initial kind of probing and just see what your exposure is. You know, if there's those things aren't necessarily there, then you can move on to other things. But it's a great opportunity to have some fun. You can really get a lot of different people cross-functionally engaged with some of that. Does come at a, probably you need to make sure you give notice and give awareness to the proper people. So you're not the guy that's, or gal that's just searching executives like crazy. But if that's your role and you're able to do that, weirdly, it can be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. That's it for this Black Hat edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back later in the week with our Brightcast edition. Hope to hear from you then.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.